Welcome to Outlook Weekend on the BBC World Service, the home of extraordinary stories from around the globe. I'm Grace Livingstone. Today we're in an embroidery workshop in central London. Most people here are exiles from Chile. They were forced to leave in the 1970s when the country was ruled by the dictator General Augusto Pinochet. Under his military regime, tens of thousands of people were tortured. More than 3,000 people were killed or kidnapped by the security forces and were never seen again. They became known as the disappeared. The women and men around me are painstakingly stitching brightly coloured thread onto squares of cotton and hessian. After a little while, their work starts to reveal embroidered pictures, known in Chile as arpilleras. They're making them to remember the people who died during Pinochet's dictatorship. There's about 15 people sitting at tables. They've got needles and thread in their hands. There's scissors on the table, bags of different coloured threads, red, yellow, pink, green, balls of wool.
I'm doing a group of 12. And they are from the south of Chile. All these people were executed.
So laid out on this table, nine beautiful white pieces of material with cross stitch embroidered around the edge. And each one has a beautifully embroidered, colourful, rural scene.
They all love the land. They all love the land, the flowers, the rivers. This is the river.
And that's an embroidered river with cotton, blue and green material.
And then you just create something. This is el volcán,
a volcano.
That's a volcano. Executado el 4 de octubre de 1973.
So executed on the 4th of October 1973, so you've embroidered that in grey thread.
I've embroidered it in grey because it's sad. Yeah.
I've got two pieces. The workshops are run by an art teacher called Jimena Pardo. Is this hessian?
Hessian, or I think it's called burlap as well. And in Chile, we call it this fabric arpillera. I think traditionally the materials that were used in arpilleras were very humble materials, like coffee sacks or flour sacks, recycled fabrics.
Jimena set up these workshops after seeing an exhibition showing similar crafts made by political prisoners during their incarceration under Pinochet's military regime. But there was a deeply personal reason why Jimena was so moved by the art on display. Her own mother's work was part of that show. As a medical student and young activist, her mother, Christina, had been snatched from her teaching hospital by the secret police just 2 months after baby Jimena was born. She suffered interrogation in one of Pinochet's notorious torture centres and spent years in a prison camp, enduring the heartache of being separated from her new baby daughter. But growing up, Jimena had never known just what her mother had endured in Chile. It wasn't something they discussed.
I think when I was younger, I knew that there had been a coup. I knew that my parents had been detained and that we had been exiled. I had an idea of the general politics, but I think I was nervous to maybe ask about my parents' actual experience. So I think maybe scared even to know details.
But seeing her mother's craftwork proudly on display gave Jimena the courage to find out the missing parts of her story.
I could ask about a piece, a textile that she'd made. But a lot of it for me has been like a puzzle where I get little bits of information and I piece them together.
Stitch by stitch, Jimena would unfurl the tapestry of her mother's life, one of secret imprisonment, resistance and creativity.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto.
In this episode, you'll hear, through the women in one family, the story of how needle and thread became the tools of resistance in Pinochet's prisons.
Perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco, y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado.
When I dialed up Jimena's mother, Cristina Zamora, she began by talking about her mother, who'd given birth to her in Santiago in 1950.
As a family, we used to spend a lot of time together, particularly after meals. Listen to music, dance.
Dicen que la distancia es el olvido, pero yo no concibo esa razón.
But Cristina's happy childhood was hit by tragedy. When she was just 8 years old, her mother died of cancer.
What kind of relationship did you have with your mother before she died?
Well, I spent a lot of time with her because I was the youngest one and all the older ones were doing their own thing. My mom was a keen dressmaker. She would make all my dresses when I was little. I think there was an organza little fluffy dress she made for me. Yeah, that I used to love, yeah. I have always enjoyed making things.
Cristina inherited a love of sewing from her mother. But her early death affected Cristina in another way. She began to dream of becoming a doctor.
It made me think that I would like to be in a career that had to do with health and looking after people.
Early on, Cristina realised it was not so easy for women to have a career. But as you'll learn, Cristina can only be described as determined and tenacious.
I think at a younger age, I started thinking that women had a hard life and confronted inequalities. And I think that was also another reason that prompted me to study at university, because my aim was to become financially independent. And I thought at that time I would not marry. So I suppose one could say that I was becoming a feminist. I think it was, watching my mother and my sister. My sister were fairly clever. They had studied the whole primary and secondary school. They would have loved to go to university, but they just married too young.
Ah, so you were determined to go to university and have a career?
Yeah.
Cristina worked hard at school, with just the occasional break to listen to rock and roll.
The warmth of your love's like the warmth from the sun, and this will be our year.
In 1969, she won a place to study medicine at the University of Santiago. She threw herself into her studies, attending lectures while also training on hospital wards. But it wasn't all work and no play.
Oh, well, now and again, we used to have a nice party.
Darling, I love you. You gave me faith to go on. Now we're there and we've only just begun. This will be our year.
The other thing Cristina and her friends made time for was politics. As a medical student, she'd helped treat people in Santiago's poor shanty towns. The extreme poverty she witnessed there convinced her that Chile needed to change. And like thousands of other Chileans, she took her hopes for a more equal society to the ballot box. In 1970, Salvador Allende, a doctor, was elected as Chile's first ever socialist president.
I went to the city centre, to Santiago city centre, to the Alameda, which is the main avenue in the centre of Santiago. And I was there, according to our count, nearly a million citizens celebrating. It was quite an emotional experience to be there. You know, the people appear so happy. Everybody's so happy. Some people were crying tears of happiness.
La vida en nuestra patria.
Cristina began to get more involved in student politics, attending meetings and peaceful rallies. She joined a left-wing student group that was independent from Allende's Popular Unity Coalition, but backed his government's programme of literacy campaigns, wage rises, land for poor farmers, and something dear to Cristina's heart, free healthcare for all.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
During those packed political meetings, Her mind was firmly on politics. But to her surprise, romance crept in with a fellow medical student called Armando.
I liked the way he was. He was very quiet. He had a nice attitude to other people. But when he spoke, he was very wise. I appreciated him, I think, first as a friend. Then we started going on demonstrations together, to places together, and eventually we became a couple.
But those days, full of hope, were short-lived. Because on September the 11th, 1973, the head of the army, General Augusto Pinochet, overthrew the elected socialist government in a violent coup. That morning, Cristina and Armando woke up to the sound of guns.
We could hear the shots and noises like explosions. And we listened to the radio, and they were saying that there was a military coup.
Their hopes of a fairer country with free healthcare for all were dashed. They were now living under a military regime with soldiers and armoured cars on the streets. Cristina and Armando would hear shots fired at night, and bodies would appear in Santiago's Mapocho River the next morning. Curfew was imposed and all political activity was banned. Tens of thousands of people were rounded up and taken to secret torture centres. Some were never seen again. They became known as the disappeared. Despite the horror of the coup, Cristina carried on studying and her love for Armando only grew. A few months later, the students got married. And while the world outside darkened, theirs became a little brighter in September 1974 when, with Armando by her side, Cristina gave birth to a baby daughter.
Jimena was born a few minutes after midnight, and then the following morning a nursery nurse brought her crying, saying that she had kept all the other babies awake, that she had been the leader. And as soon as I put her on my chest, she stopped crying. I was so happy.
And how were you feeling about the future? It was still a military regime, but you had your new young family. Were you looking forward to the future?
Of course. But always with the underlying fear. There was still martial law, curfew at night. You will hear all night helicopters going round and round.
Cristina's fears were well founded, because when Jimena was just 2 months old, the regime reached their door. Cristina was at the medical school when armed men arrived.
And I was looking at the babies that were on the ward at the time, and I was called from the secretary's part of the hospital. They were plainclothes agents of the secret police. The agent looked at my identity card, and he nearly looked sad. You know, it was a very strange feeling I got, that he was being really sorry for me, that I was the person he was looking for.
Cristina was busy studying and caring for her newborn baby, but she was still in touch with students involved in underground resistance against the Pinochet regime.
I started thinking what I should say or not say, and they took me to the back of the truck where there were other medical students already there, and at some point they took me to our family home, to Armando's home, because they were looking for Armando. But Armando wasn't there at the time. That was my last opportunity to give a cuddle to Jimena.
Cristina was taken to a secret torture centre in Santiago. According to the Chilean National Commission on Truth and Reconciliation, an official report into human rights abuses under Pinochet, the place she'd been sent to was known as Venda Sexy because of the sexual abuse the prisoners were subjected to. While she was detained here, nobody knew of Cristina's whereabouts. Many people here were tortured to death or killed without anyone ever knowing what happened to them. Christina didn't know if she would become one of the disappeared.
I just got this feeling. I remember the feeling I had at the time, you know, how my mind was working so fast. Then when I wasn't being interrogated and I was just sitting around with the other female prisoners, then I would be sad because I wasn't with Ximena. And I had a very physical reminder because my breasts were so painful because of the sudden stopping breastfeeding.
The day after she arrived, the secret police brought Christina's husband, Armando, to the same prison.
I was made to witness when he was being tortured. They were using me as pressure for him to talk.
Christina suffered two nightmarish weeks here before she and Armando were taken to another secret detention centre called Cuatro Alamos. Still, nobody in the outside world knew where she was. It was here the secret police would decide her fate, whether to transfer her to an official prison or make her disappear. After another 2 weeks of terrifying uncertainty, Christina was taken to Tres Alamos, a prison camp, and at last her family were allowed to know her whereabouts. Armando was also moved to the same prison and housed in a separate men's compound.
When you first arrived, I felt a bit in a fog because you were kind of trying to process everything that has happened. You know, such a drastic change from being a medical student with a small baby to being a political prisoner.
Tres Alamos was a different kind of place. It was sparse, bleak and overcrowded. There were cold showers and very little food. But it was more open, and the women prisoners were able to see each other during the day. Christina noticed the inmates had created their own support system.
There was so much solidarity. When you arrived, they really treated you so well.
I understand that the women prisoners helped each other out, sharing food.
Well, the food brought by the relatives was brought in. Let's say tomatoes, boiled eggs or whatever, and then a few of us would prepare the food and then distribute it to everybody.
Prison life was still hard, though. The cells were so overcrowded that Christina often slept on the floor. But the cells did open out onto a courtyard, and in the daytime, the women could meet there. It was in this courtyard that they began to make crafts, sewing, knitting and embroidering.
We literally functioned like a workshop. We would all sit on a stool. You could choose to be quiet if you wanted to. And so it was a time when you could reflect. And it used to make me feel calm and peaceful. It allowed me to think about my past life and think about the future, whatever that might be.
They used scraps of material brought in by relatives. Concentrating on painstaking needlework enabled them, for a few moments at least, to take their minds off the ordeal they were going through.
Making crafts was a way of coping, and a lot of us were very busy making things, doing things. It was a way of coping. There was an improvement in the mental health of the prisoner. And yeah, we did embroidery blouses, knitted goods and things like that.
As well as a form of therapy, the workshops had a very practical side. The women began to sell their crafts to raise money for those inmates who had children at home. Christina even used her crafting skills to help the women prisoners send secret messages.
I think I became a master in miniature things. If they wanted to send a message, even for silly things like sending a message to their partners in the men's prison, because they would look at everything you know, if you send a letter, it has to be double stamped by the commandant in charge and all that. But if they wanted some privacy, so they would come to me and I would make something for them that was really tiny, that it wouldn't encourage them to rip it apart.
And it had a little message sewn inside.
Yeah, we used to use, those cigarette wrappers with very tiny writing in it. I think it was a form of resistance. The military wanted us to be unhappy and helpless, but we were helping ourselves.
At this prison, Cristina was allowed visits and she was finally able to see her baby Jimena.
I think we had a joint visit with her, Armando, me and her, and she just kept saying, more vate vate, which was that you would, you know, hold her hand, each of us, and just swing her.
How did you feel when you had this moment playing with your baby daughter and then you had to say goodbye to her?
Oh, yeah, it was sad. Yeah, very sad.
After 2 years in the prison camp, Cristina was released without charge. She came to London with Jimena in 1976. A few months later, Armando was freed and came to join them in Britain.
I still remember being in the plane. We arrived near midnight and I could see the lights of London. My first impression of the weather was rain, rain, rain.
Cristina and Armando were given a grant by the World University Service and picked up their studies in Birmingham.
And how were those first years for you when you were studying medicine again and getting used to Britain?
Well, I think it was okay because, well, I love medicine anyhow. And now I was studying in English. And it allowed me time to be able to be more proficient in the language by the time I saw patients as a proper qualified doctor.
That's so amazingly clever. And you achieved your ambition of having a career despite all you went through.
Yep.
Cristina went on to become a doctor working for Britain's National Health Service for 40 years. And just like Cristina, Jimena grew up watching her mother and her father making things.
My dad, he set up a weaving loom in the bedroom and he began to weave belts and bags and he would show me how to weave. And my mum was making some dolls and we'd also make like little leather purses and I'd sort of help with some of the stitching. They sort of had brought over a lot of the crafts that they had been making in detention.
Then in 2018, a fellow former inmate asked Cristina and Armando if they'd like to display some of their crafts in an exhibition alongside the works of other political prisoners. When she saw her own mother's work on display, Jimena plucked up the courage to ask her mother about her life during the dictatorship.
I've sort of always been proud of my mum and love her and have very sort of deep respect for her convictions. It has enabled me to ask a few more questions and find out a bit more of this puzzle for me. And I think it's been a very intimate journey. It is emotional. But I think it's important that she does share these stories with me, with my brother, with my sister, with, you know, at some point with her grandkids. Because it's not just a part of our own family history. I think it's part of a collective experience.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el oído, que en todo su ancho graba noche y día.
Inspired by the exhibition of prisoners' crafts, and determined that the horrors of the Pinochet regime should never be forgotten, Jimena set up her embroidery workshops. Many of those who come to embroider have also suffered imprisonment and exile. Jimena says making crafts together can help people of all ages.
I can't say that it will heal everything thoroughly, but I think just maybe getting together, being with other people that have lived through the same things and making these things together and talking about them, and passing that on to, you know, sharing that with a younger generation, I think does have some healing capacity.
I was going to invite Danny to sing a song.
Chile limita al norte con el Perú.
The families of the disappeared in Chile are still seeking answers. More than 900 of Pinochet's victims are still missing. Cristina made crafts to endure imprisonment under the dictatorship. Today, Jimena hopes her craft workshops will help the search for justice and that the beautiful, painstakingly stitched embroideries will keep the memory of the disappeared alive.
Memory, for me, is one of the things that has always been at play since the dictatorship. There's a fear, I think, amongst people that are survivors and their families that these stories will be covered up.
Well, I think it's very easy to forget. And you would expect those who were for the dictatorship, they would like us to forget.
Just the fact that there hasn't been justice for many of these families and that we still don't know where many of the disappeared are. So for people that have a relative or a loved one that is disappeared, they are still living with this every day. They feel this as if it happened yesterday. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's still important for us to carry on with this project.
Jimena Pardo and Cristina Zamora. To see pictures of the craft, visit our Facebook page. Just search BBC Outlook. I'm Grace Livingstone, and this has been Outlook Weekend. Goodbye.